Welcome to the Old Time Dragnet Show from Boise, Idaho. This is your host, Adam Graham. Hey, if you got a comment, send it to me, box13 at greatdetectives.net. Become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.radiodragnet.com. I'm also pleased to announce that Andrew Rhines, who does our sound, has been nominated for a podcast award for Best Culture and Arts Podcast for his old-time radio Daily Westerns podcast. You can vote for him every day with the clock resetting at midnight Eastern at podcastawards.com. And that's the old-time radio Daily Western between now and the 15th. We got a couple comments from listeners regarding the number two episode on my favorite 1960s Dragnet countdown. This one from over on Facebook, Daniel says, this is definitely one Dragnet episode which anyone watching would find hard to forget because of its notorious camp elements regarding Blue Boy and his dealings with Friday and Gannon. This despite the fact it did a good job of portraying the problems the police had enforcing the drug laws when drug in question was at the time not illegal to possess or consume. One thing I found interesting when researching that episode is when Michael Hade was writing his book, My Name's Friday, he actually interviewed some of the investigators who were technical consultants on that episode, and nothing there was considered to be out of line with reality. And elsewhere, it's been commented that while some of the hippies and stuff seem cliched watching it in the 21st century, there was a certain element of realism to it. So it could be that the 1960s hippies may have been themselves campy, more than Dragnet's portrayal of them. Tracy comments, I probably would have made this episode number one. This was a good episode and was very definitive. It was interesting. This episode was written by John Randolph, who incidentally was Jack Webb himself, who also wrote the pilot episode, The Mission Impossible for Adam 12. And Webb definitely did do some writing on these shows. There were several television show episodes and radio episodes that were written by Webb. And I think he was certainly capable of writing all the shows, but he did so much work behind the camera and in front of the camera. There just was not enough time. By the way, I listed my number one favorite episode. I have not received any feedback yet. The Big Departure. I think just because of the really sort of hopeful message that's, I think, particularly meaningful in the days in which we live, really is a favorite for me. Got a nice comment here from Mike regarding the Big Gun or part two. As usual, Adam, great job in podcast. Good luck with the new books. Thank you so much, Mike. And really, I'm pretty pleased with the project and the book that's come out. It's hilarious and poignant and is great for any superhero fan out there. It's available. You can just click the link at radiodragnet.com. We've made that available. And it's Tales of the Dim Knight on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and lots of other places. And we got our first review this week, so pretty excited about that. Well, let's go ahead and we're going to get into today's episode of Dragnet, The Big Will.
Sound off for Chesterfield. Chesterfield, first with premium quality and best for you. Chesterfield brings you Dragnet.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent. You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned the homicide detail. A man has been shot and critically wounded. There's no trace of the suspect. Your job, find him.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Sunday, April 26th. It was raining in Los Angeles. We were working the night watch out of homicide detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Captain Lorman. My name's Friday. I was on my way back to the office, and it was 11:44 p.m. when I got to room 42. Homicide.
Hi, Frank. Hi.
Anybody call?
Yeah, Lopey called. Wants to know if he left his overshoes.
No, I didn't see him. It's quit raining anyway. What are you doing there?
Just a minute, John.
What's the scale for?
The needle's bent a little.
And what are you doing?
Here, weighing my stuff.
Your what?
Weighing my stuff.
Oh, yeah. I guess everybody ought to know what his stuff weighs, huh?
Yeah. Let's see. My gun. Better take the bullets out first.
What are you doing that for?
Weigh them separate, Joe.
Keep track. Yeah, that's right.
Now, the bullets. Handcuffs.
Frank, did anybody ever ask you about all this?
And my bullet clip.
Look, I'm a member of the club here, too. What's this all about?
Pencils?
Four?
Yeah, press kind of hard.
Yeah.
Other stuff in my wallet. Change. Keys. Boy, no wonder my feet kill me.
What?
6 pounds, 2.5 ounces. That's what I carry, Joe. Working night's got a flashlight, too. That's good for another pound.
You figure that's what makes your feet hurt, huh?
Sure.
Yeah. 6 pounds, 2 ounces. How much do you weigh, Frank?
Any calls?
Come on, how much?
Joe, I get that all day from Faye. Never thought I'd get it from you.
Yeah, it's a hot shot. I'll get it.
What do you got?
Shooting on East Berendo. 11:45 p.m. We swung out of the City Hall garage and headed south on Main Street. The streets were still wet after the rain. Code 3, red light and siren. And even with that, driving a fast car is no picnic. You can be wrong at every corner. Big buildings to block off the sound of your siren. Cars to shield the red light from oncoming motorists. It's no fun. There'd been a shooting and we had to get there. As Frank and I swung around the last streetcar on Main Street and picked up Berendo, we heard the police radio operator dispatching ambulance G13 to the address we were headed for. We didn't know what direction the ambulance would come from, so for the next few blocks, we drove with added caution, knowing that our siren would keep us from hearing theirs. 5 blocks ahead, through the mist, we could see the red lights of a police car parked at the curb. A radio car in the area had gotten the call and answered it immediately. It was 11:52 p.m. when we pulled up in front of 1981 East Berendo. The large house was dark. 2 neighborhood women stood in the driveway and directed us to the back of the house where we found the officers from Unit 1A6. We checked with them and got the information that they'd come up with. They suggested that they canvass the immediate area for any information on the assailant. Frank and I went in through the back door of the house. The victim lay on the floor. He was unconscious and bleeding profusely. His head was held in the lap of another man.
Are you the doctor?
No, sir. We're police officers. The ambulance is on the way here.
If I could just stop the bleeding. It's his chest.
Do you know who did this?
No.
Has he been conscious at all since you've been here?
Just for a second.
Did he say anything?
Well, I heard the shot and came right over. He was laying here on the floor, right here. Poor guy.
Yes, sir. Did he say anything?
Help me. That's all he said. Help me. I didn't know what to do. I got this towel from the sink and tried to stop the bleeding. Fist in my handkerchief, that's all I had. Can't do much, but I had to try. I had to keep pressing. That's all I could think of. Keep pressing. Try to stop it.
Yes, sir. Do you feel all right, sir?
Oh, yes, yes, I'm all right. Got to help him.
Here, let me get in there and take care of that.
All right, come on, sir. Get under.
Okay, you got it, Joe?
All right. Yes, sir. Come on, sir. Get up. That's all right. You'll handle this.
The excitement. Can't seem to get my breath.
Something we can get for you?
Oh, I'll be all right. I think I'll get a drink of water.
I'd rather you wouldn't touch that glass, sir.
Huh? Oh, yeah, fingerprints. Well, I can wait. Oh, say, I did touch that towel. Hope it didn't hurt anything. Didn't mean to.
No, sir, I don't think so. What's your name?
Paul West. I live right next door, right across the driveway, Gray House.
Uh-huh. Wonder if you could tell us what happened.
Sure, I want to help all I can. I live right next door, and I was the first one here. Anything I can do, I want to help.
Yes, sir.
I've known Charlie for, I guess it's maybe 40 years. Long time.
Charlie, that's the man's name here?
Yes, Charles Stahl.
How you doing, Frank?
That's pretty bad. I don't know.
Would you tell us what happened here?
Well, it was right after Charlie left my place. That's when I heard the noise.
What noise, West?
I was out on my porch putting out the cans, getting the boxer ready, when I heard the noise. First off, I thought Charlie was doing the same thing, getting the cans ready.
Well, what kind of a noise?
Like he dropped the box. I know now that wasn't it.
Joe?
Just a minute, West. Yeah.
I think he's coming around.
Is he coming too? Are you going to say anything? Who shot him?
All right, just a minute.
What's his name again?
Stahl.
Mr. Stahl. Mr. Stahl.
Maybe you talk to me. He knows me. We're friends. Let me talk to him.
No, wait right there, will you, West?
I just wanted to help.
All right, stay right there.
Now, Mr. Stahl, we want to help you. Can you tell us who shot you?
Hey, what you saying? Is he giving you the name?
Hold it, West. Just a minute. How about it, Frank?
He's dead.
Did he say anything?
Yeah. Not much help.
No?
Ask me not to shoot him again.
It was a couple of minutes before midnight when Charles Stahl died in Frank's arms. According to the next-door neighbor, Paul West, the victim was 55 years old. He was not married, and he lived in the big house on Berendo by himself. The ambulance crew returned to Georgia Street Receiving Hospital after making out a DOA report, and the coroner's office was asked to pick up the body. 12 minutes later, coroner's deputies Maxwell and Martinez arrived. Before the murdered man's body was removed, the crew from the crime lab photographed the scene, and Frank and I signed a property receipt for the money and the personal effects found on the body. We asked the crime lab to check a .32 caliber Smith & Wesson revolver found on the floor under the kitchen stove. There was one empty cartridge in the cylinder. We put in a call to gun records, but we found nothing on the gun. A call to R&I on the victim of the shooting turned up nothing. Latent fingerprints found nothing on the murder weapon. The crime lab crew found no footprints in the ground near the house, but they did find several marks of tire tracks and one good impression left in the moist dirt in the alley behind the house. A plaster cast was made of the imprint, and it was returned to the office to be booked as evidence. We checked with the officers in Unit 1A6, but they said that in canvassing the neighborhood, they'd been unable to come up with any new leads. 12:21 a.m., we checked back into the house, and we talked to the neighbor, Paul West.
Well, what kind of a job did Stahl have?
Owned a print shop, Stahl Press, over on the east side.
Was he in business by himself?
What do you mean?
Well, did he have any partners?
No, Charlie owned it right out. Had the pink slip, you might say.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us the address?
Sure. Biggest print shop on the east side. Printed just about everything. Posters, display cards, things like that. He gave me some cards last Christmas. Here, take a look. That's my name. Embossed.
Yes, sir.
Did it himself.
Mm-hmm. That's very nice, sir.
Can I have that back, please?
Oh, sure. Here you are.
Embossed.
Anybody in the shop with him? Any employees?
Well, there's the Becker kids, Pete and Alvin.
They work in the shop, do they?
Yeah, I've been with him. I guess it's been about 5 years.
How's he get along with them, would you know?
Fine. I never heard about any trouble. I've been kind of friends with the family. Charlie was pretty fond of him.
Did he have any personal enemies, maybe because of the business?
No, not that I know of.
Uh-huh. How long did you say you've known Stahl?
Been about 40 years. We grew up together.
I see.
His father and mine built these houses at the same time. Charlie and I went to school together. Belonged to the same club. We were soldiers together. Served in the 146th Field Artillery in the war.
Was that the last war, sir?
Oh, no, the big one. First World War.
Oh, I see.
Came back and we lived right here, side by side, all this time. We've been friends, Charlie and me. Good friends. You've got to catch the person that did this. You've got to get him.
You said earlier that Stahl had been over to your house tonight.
Yes, that's right.
Did he have any special reason for the visit?
Well, he didn't need a reason. Charlie was always welcome. Always.
Well, yes, sir, we understand.
Of course, tonight's Sunday, we had a game.
Sir?
Bridge. Always play bridge on Sunday night. Never miss.
Well, what time did he get to your house?
Same time as always, right after supper.
What time's that, sir?
Right after, 7:30. We were just finishing supper when he came in. Charlie sat down and had dessert and coffee with us.
Mm-hmm.
Rice pudding with raisins. Charlie had two dishes. Then we started to play bridge.
Oh, I see. Now, who else was there?
You mean the game?
Yeah.
Oh, just Rose and Paula. Rose is my wife and Paula's my daughter.
Anything unusual happened tonight?
Just once.
Yeah, what was that?
Well, a bit of grand slam in spades and made it, even with Rose, 7 spades.
Well, that's not exactly what we mean, Wes.
Pretty unusual.
Yes, sir, but did anything happen with Stahl?
Sure, he almost hit the ceiling when we made it.
Got pretty mad, did he?
Sure. Since we've been playing, most he ever did was make a little slam.
Mm-hmm.
He went right home after that. I guess that's when he went out to empty the cans. Anyway, that's when I heard the noise.
That was the shot, sir.
It must have been. I didn't know it at the time, but I guess that's what it was.
What'd you do after you heard the shot?
Well, now, at the time, I didn't know what it was. I thought maybe Charlie had fallen and hurt himself.
Mm-hmm.
I looked over at his place, but there wasn't any lights on. I went out the curb with a box of cans. Came back, and I didn't see Charlie, so I walked over.
I see.
I called to him, asked if he was all right. Didn't get no answer, so I came in. Found him right on the floor, where he was when you came in.
You're the one who put in the call, is that right?
Yeah, I called the operator and told her to get an ambulance right over that Charlie had been shot. Told her to send a policeman.
Now, what time was it when Stahl left your house?
Oh, it must have been about 11:15 or so. Earlier than usual. We always play almost to midnight. I guess Charlie got miffed about the grand slam I made, and then Paula kidded him about the woman.
What woman is that?
Oh, wasn't anything. I went out and looked. Nobody there.
Sir?
A couple of times, Charlie thought he heard a woman coughing outside the window by his house. I went over to the window, looked out there, but wasn't anybody there.
Well, did you hear this coughing?
No, not really. After Charlie started talking about it, I thought I did, but when I went out to look, there wasn't anybody there. His imagination, that's all. He was mad because of the slam.
Well, did you hear anything at all when you were out and back?
Huh?
Well, when you went into Stahl's house, did you hear anybody around? A car, maybe? Something like that?
No, not a soul.
Now, Wes, could somebody have gone out the front of the house when you came in the back?
Wouldn't seem it could be. I'd have heard him if they did.
Well, then you'd say that whoever shot Stahl wasn't in the house when you went in, isn't it?
Pretty sure about that. Of course, they might have left before I went in.
Sir?
Well, I'd already took a box of cans out the front after I heard the noise. If there's anybody in the house, they could have gotten out then.
But you didn't see anybody, did you?
No, nobody at all.
Do you know if Stahl has any relatives in Los Angeles?
No.
He hasn't, huh?
Hasn't got any place, none at all. Always kind of worried him.
Why is that?
Well, he used to say that he didn't have any folks to leave his things to. The house, print shop.
Mm-hmm.
He made a will, though. All legal, with a seal and all. Official. He used to talk to me about it.
I see. You know who the beneficiary was, would you?
Not now.
What?
Well, I knew who it was, but he said he was going to change it. Said he was going to put a new name on.
Well, did he say whose?
Nope. Just said I'd be surprised.
We looked through the victim's desk for the will. In one of the bottom drawers, we found a locked tin box. In a box of paper clips, we found a key that fit. In the top liner of the box, there was a Purple Heart ribbon and an American Victory Medal from the First World War. In the bottom of the box, there were several government bonds and the will. In it, he left the house and the rest of his possessions to a Mrs. Margaret Becker. The print shop and the business he left to Mrs. Becker's sons, Peter and Alvin. The will was dated 3 years previously. On a separate piece of paper, we found an address for a Mrs. Margaret Becker, the Lone Star Motel on Sepulveda Boulevard. 12:40 a.m., we affixed the public administrator's seal, which the coroner's deputy had left with us, to the door of the victim's house. We talked with the wife and daughter of the neighbor, Paul West. They confirmed the story he'd given us. On the way to talk to the Becker woman, we stopped and called the office. They checked the name through R&I, but they came up with no identification. We called Sergeant Jay Allen at the crime lab, and he told us that the tire marks found in the rear of the victim's house were made by 3 B.F. Goodrich tires and 1 truck tire. He said that the cast they'd made was of the truck tire, as it was the only one they could lift, and that it was made by the left front wheel. There was a car parked in front of the manager's cottage. The registration listed Margaret Becker as the owner. Legal the same. We checked it.
Motor's cold.
Yeah. Tires don't match.
Well, nice try.
Yeah. Let's go. I get it.
Late.
Yeah.
1:15. Probably asleep.
Yeah.
What's the matter? Can't you read? Sign says no vacancy. That means full up. N-O, that means no. Waken somebody at this hour?
Yes, ma'am.
And don't ask me if I know someplace where you can stay, because I don't. Good night.
Just a minute, Miss Becker.
How do you know my name?
Police officers.
What do you want around here? I run a clean place, no trouble, license all paid up, nothing wrong.
We'd like to talk to you.
What about?
You know a man named Charles Stahl?
What are you asking that for?
We'd like to know.
And I want to know why you're asking. What's this all about? Anything wrong with Charlie? That why you're out here?
Yes, ma'am.
What's wrong?
Well, it's pretty serious.
Well, go ahead, you can tell me.
Well, he's dead, Miss Becker.
Come in.
Thank you.
What's the matter, Margaret? Who are these fellows? Who are you? What are you doing here?
They're policemen.
Well, we don't need you. We got the whole thing cleaned up. We took care of it ourselves. Nobody sent for you. We took care of him.
No, Daddy. They're here about Charles.
Charlie Stahl?
Yes, sir. That's right.
Charlie here? Well, where is he?
He's not here, Daddy. Something's happened to him.
What?
He's dead.
Dead? Charlie?
Yes.
Well, how did it happen? An accident?
No, sir.
Oh, poor Charlie Stahl. He's a nice boy. Too bad. I thought you was here about the fellow number 8, the loud one.
What's that, sir?
Man from Texas came in tonight pretty drunk. We had to take him in. Daddy put him to bed. He was pretty drunk.
Heavy, too.
That's what he thought you were out here for.
Couldn't even get out of his car. Margaret had the pocket for him. Loud, you know, real drunk. Wore his pants inside his boots.
What was it you wanted to see me about?
There's a few questions we'd like to ask you.
About Charles?
Yes, ma'am. When was the last time you saw him?
Must have been a couple of weeks ago.
I saw him last week, April 22nd, went fishing down on the pier.
Miss Becker, what was your relationship with Stahl?
Good friends, that's all. We knew each other almost all our lives. I used to live next door to him. Went through school together.
I always thought they were going to get married. Charlie was a good boy.
You see much of him lately?
No, not too much. I've been busy here with Daddy, and Charlie's had other things to do.
Moved next door to him on December 14th. Exactly 42 years ago come winter.
You know if he had any enemies, ma'am?
No, can't think of anyone who didn't like Charlie.
Didn't catch anything at the pier. Bad bait.
You've been home all evening, have you?
Yeah. Why'd you ask that?
Well, it's just routine.
You think I had something to do with it, that it?
No, ma'am, we don't.
Pinheads, that's what you need.
I beg your pardon, sir?
Pinhead anchovies. That's what you need for pier fishing.
You say it's routine, but I don't like you coming in here, waking us up with all these questions. We've had a bad night, that drunk coming in here. We've been on the go ever since then.
A few years ago, we used to be able to get a lot of pinheads. Not anymore.
You want to make any accusations, you talk to Paul West. You just talk to him. Try your routine questions there.
Paul West?
Yeah, Charlie's neighbor. He's never liked Charlie, never. Anyone hurt Charlie, it was Paul.
Why'd he say that, Mrs. Becker?
Years ago, Charlie was sweet on Paul's sister. On the way back from the beach one night, there was an accident, and Paul's sister was killed. Never forgave Charlie. Always held him to blame.
Well, why was that, Miss Becker?
Charlie was driving. Paul hated Charles for it. Another thing with a daughter. Paul didn't like that either. Somebody did something to Charlie. You routine the man next door. You talk to Paul West. Now get out of here. I want to get some sleep. If you got any more questions, you come back in the morning, and I'll talk to you then. You get out of here now.
Yes, ma'am. But what did you mean, the thing with her, West's daughter?
All right. I'll tell you that, then. You've got to get out of here.
Yes, ma'am.
A couple of months ago, Paula came home, divorced her husband, and moved home. Right away, Charlie got sweet on her. Paul didn't like it. Didn't like it at all.
Did you ever say anything to Stahl about it?
You bet he did. They had a lot of arguments, a lot of them. You talk to Paul West. He's the one you got to talk to. Now, good night.
We'll be back in the morning, ma'am.
I'll be here. Don't worry. I'll talk to you then.
I'm going fishing tomorrow. They're getting pinheads now.
There's a new one, huh? West's daughter.
Yeah.
Better check it out. Hold it a minute. Let's take a look back at the carport here. There it is, a Texas license plate.
Yeah. I'll check the motor.
How about it?
Radiator's warm. How about the wheels?
Three Goodrich tires and a truck tire.
You are listening to Dragnet, the authentic story of your police force in action.
The information we'd gotten from the crime lab gave us the make of the tires that had left the imprints in back of the victim's house. Three of the tires had been identified as being of Goodrich make. The fourth was a truck tire. The car we'd found in the carport of cabin number 8 had tires that matched the description. 1:26 a.m., we went back to talk to Margaret Becker.
I'd like to know just what this is all about. Why you're snooping around asking questions. Now, why don't you come right on out with it? Come on, you think I had something to do with Charlie being dead, isn't that it?
No, ma'am, we told you before, this is just a routine investigation. We're trying to get the facts here.
You still haven't told us about Charlie. Was he killed?
Yes, ma'am.
You think I did it?
We didn't say that.
Not in so many words you didn't, but that's what you meant. You found the will. That's what made you think it was me, isn't that it?
You knew about the will, didn't you?
Certainly I knew about it. Charles told me when he had it drawn up. Said he didn't have anybody else, wanted to see that me and the boys were taken care of.
Too bad about Charlie Stahl. He's a good boy. He's going to take care of Margaret.
He ever say anything to you about changing the will?
Yes. Told me about it the last time I saw him. Had lunch together, and he told me then.
Tell you what changes he was going to make?
No, not right out. I didn't have to. I knew. I could tell. The way he's been acting lately, I could tell.
So could I.
Well, what do you mean, the way he's been acting? Was there anything wrong?
Well, this thing with Paula. Told you about that. Charlie's been acting like a fool, falling all over, gushing sweet talk. Silly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she had him in a trance. Her just 25 and him 55. Talk about spring and winter. Well, that was them.
How'd Paula feel about this?
How'd you expect her to feel? She thought that Charlie'd leave her the money, house, everything. She went right along with it, real brazen.
Sir?
Yeah?
You said earlier that you thought your daughter and Mr. Stahl might get married. Is that right?
You better did. They always been in love.
Daddy, that's not true.
Which is, too. I'm your father now. You show a little respect. After that no-good Becker walked out on Maggie, she and Charlie started to see each other again. Went real nice. Then Paula come into town, and Charlie Stahl took up with her.
Mm-hmm.
Charlie Stahl made out his will so that everything went to Margaret and the kids. Then he decided he'd change it.
You knew about the will, too, huh?
Sure, I was a friend of Charlie's. We used to go fishing all the time.
talk about things. I told him that he was wrong to even think of changing his will. I told him that he was wrong.
What time did you say that car from Texas got in, ma'am?
I told you, about 10:15.
Well, ma'am, is it possible that somebody could have taken the car out without you knowing about it?
Hey, wait a minute, Margaret. That ain't right.
What?
It wasn't that late. It was only about 8 when he come in. I remember, because I was in bed at 8:30. I put him to bed and then come back and went to bed myself. I wanted to get some sleep, kind of going fishing in the morning.
You're pretty sure about the time, are you?
Well, you bet. I remember, because I got in bed and turned on the radio. Listened to that radio program about the detective. Fell asleep before the end. Never did find out who stole the jewels and did the murder.
What was your daughter doing when you came back?
Just sitting there. She went out to put the car away, and I went to bed.
Mm-hmm. How long was she outside?
I don't know. A few minutes, I guess.
Can you tell us a little closer than that?
Not very well. I told you I went to sleep. I didn't hear her come in.
Miss Becker, I wonder if you'd get dressed, please. We'd like to talk to you downtown.
What for?
Well, we have a report from our crime lab. They found some tire tracks in back of Stahl's house tonight. They were fresh tracks. They'd been made since it stopped raining. Those tracks match the car you got parked back there.
And you think I drove the car over to Charlie's?
Well, we'd like to talk about it.
Why? Why'd I do a thing like that? Why'd I want to kill Charlie?
Maybe because he was going to cut you out of his will. Looks like a pretty good motive.
Oh, you two are out of your minds.
All right, ma'am. We'll lay it out for you.
You better do that. Make an accusation you can't back up.
The way the evidence looks, we got a pretty good case here. The way it looks, you took the car and you drove it over to Stahl's. He was next door playing cards, so you waited in the kitchen for him to come back. A couple of times, you coughed while you were waiting. He heard you. He came over to the window to see who it was. Because it was dark, he couldn't see you.
I haven't heard a story like that since I stopped reading fairy tales.
He came home and you killed him. Then you heard Mr. West next door. He came over to see what it was. You went out the back way to the car that you'd parked in the alley, and you drove it back here.
That's the way it looks to you, is it?
Yes, ma'am, that's the way it looks.
You figure she killed Charlie Stahl?
Yes, sir.
You're going to arrest Margaret?
We want to talk to her about it.
Oh, going to take her down to jail, huh?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm, well, I'll go and put my clothes on.
No, that isn't necessary for you to go with her, sir.
Well, she's not going.
What?
I killed Charlie Stahl.
Daddy.
You killed him?
Yep. Got tired of how I was treating Mark. Got good and tired. Him talking about how he was going to change the will. I couldn't let him do that. I just killed him and drove the car over and did it.
What time was all this?
Huh?
What time did you go over to Stahl's?
Right after the fellow from Texas. I guess it was about 9.
What time did you kill him?
Oh, it must have been 10:30 or so. I had to wait for him to get through playing cards. I had to wait for him to come home.
Why are you doing this, Daddy?
Why am I doing it? I said somebody's got to take care of the kids. Somebody's got to take care of you. I'm an old man. I ain't much use to anybody.
All right. Come on, Miss Becker. You want to get dressed now?
She ain't the one. I did it. I killed Charlie Stahl. I already confessed. Why don't you believe me? Why don't you arrest me now? I did it.
No, I'm afraid not. You got the times a little mixed up. Stahl wasn't killed at 10:30.
No, he's just trying to help me, but he doesn't have to. Him and me were both here all night. Neither one of us left. I was in bed and asleep at midnight.
Why'd he say that?
What?
Why do you think Stahl was killed around midnight?
I didn't say that.
You said that you were home and in bed by midnight, didn't you?
Just a figure of speech. I think I've talked enough to you. I don't have to say anything more. I'm going to see a lawyer about it. You got no right.
I'm the one that did it. I'm the one.
Why'd you kill him, Mrs. Becker? You want to tell us?
Get old, nobody believes you.
How about it, Miss Becker?
I'll get dressed.
You did kill him then, huh?
Yes, I did it. Wasn't because of the money, though. You gotta believe that. It wasn't because of the money.
Ma'am.
I loved him. Deep in my heart, I loved him. Always did. Even when we were kids. I thought he was going to marry me. Then he met Paula.
You shouldn't have done it, Margaret.
I loved him and he didn't want me. He wanted Paula. You know what that's like?
What's that?
Love somebody and them not want you. Begins to eat at you. Pretty soon you can't stand it anymore. That's why I did it. Not for the money, you understand? I just wanted him.
Yeah.
Just him, that's all I wanted. Not his money, you believe that? I never wanted his money, I just wanted him. You believe that?
Well, it really doesn't make any difference, does it?
How do you mean?
You didn't get either one.
The story you have just heard is true. The names were changed to protect the innocent.
On August 6th, trial was held in Department 89, Superior Court of the State of California, in and for the County of Los Angeles. In a moment, the results of that trial. Margaret Alice Becker was tried and convicted of murder in the first degree. She was sentenced to life imprisonment in the California Institute for Women, Corona, California. Further investigation proved that the suspect's father, John Samuel Woodbridge, was not implicated in the murder. He was not held. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department. Technical advisors, Captain Jack Donahoe, Sergeant Marty Wynn, Sergeant Vance Brasher. Heard tonight were Ben Alexander, Vic Rodman, Helen Klebe, Ralph Moody. Script by John Robinson. Music by Walter Schumann. Hal Gibney speaking.
For a million laughs, tune in Chesterfield's Martin and Lewis Show, Tuesday on this same NBC station. And sound off for Chesterfield's. Either regular or king size, you'll find premium quality Chesterfield's much milder. Chesterfield is best for you.
Chesterfield has brought you Dragnet, transcribed from Los Angeles.
Welcome back. This was classic Dragnet, though I have to admit that I pretty much got the sense of the murderer's guilt when she suggested that the police were accusing her and then also tried to put the finger on the neighbor. And clearly the way it was portrayed, she had a lot of guilt over this whole matter. And that's something that does sometimes get lost in mystery and detective shows. You know, there are those people who are just killers, who really just commit murder and don't feel anything. You know, the sociopathic killers like the one that Lee Marvin played in the big cast. But then you have murderers who've got some regrets about what happened. I did find it, I always find it a little bit surrealistic when on a detective radio series, a character talks about listening to detectives on the radio. I wonder if it was Barry Craig, Confidential Investigator, which directly followed Dragnet. This episode really points out the importance of the little things, keeping those all intact. Because really, it was two pretty small steps that made the difference between the police officers cracking the case within hours, or the police going on a months-long wild goose chase trying to find the killer. The first was the tire prints and checking for those, and then the second was remembering what the dead man heard. I also really was impressed with the description given of the type of anxiety of going on a code 3, you know, lights blazing and, however, low visibility, and still needing to get there to the scene of the crime while trying to remain safe and being aware of other police cars. It was actually some pretty good insight. And kind of working our way back to the beginning, I think that the type of comedy and light comic relief that Ben Alexander brought to the Frank Smith role really is a great contribution to the character. And it's something that just was not really present before. And it set the precedent for what we saw in the 1960s series with Harry Morgan as Bill Gannon. But the comedy parts with Ben Alexander just do seem to keep getting better and better. All right, well, we do actually have a listener email I'm going to get to in just a second. I do want to let people know who've asked about getting our app in other formats, because we've got it on for the iPhone and iPod Touch. We are beginning the process of looking in to getting our app for the Android phone. I'll let you know when that happens. Nothing definitive yet, but we're looking at it. Got this email here from Michael, who says, just started listening to the old-time radio Dragnet shows on your podcast. I especially enjoy comparing how Joe and his partner managed to get their jobs done despite being hindered by the constraints of their time period. I often wonder how their work would be done with modern investigative tools. A question I had. The intro always states how the names have been changed to protect the innocent. So being that the shows end with the guilty getting their due, does that mean that their names are real names? No. They changed the names of the guilty, but it is with the purpose of protecting the innocent. And listening to some of these cases, you can see how us actually knowing the name of the criminal, you know, if they kept all the details the same, then somebody who provided the police the key clue would be in trouble, because then they could kind of piece together who it was that got them. So the innocent are protected that way. The innocent are also protected because sometimes, you know, a lot of criminals have families that have no criminal background whatsoever. So you kind of protect them by not disclosing the name. And then the writers also are innocent. And if a criminal doesn't quite care for his portrayal, then you can't sue the writer. So I kind of look at it multiple things there. And then I got this comment. One of the voices in Dragnet sounded like the voice of Archie Goodwin from Nero Wolf. I half expected Mr. Wolf to interject, "Archie, please show Sergeant Friday and his partner in and get me a beer." Well, there were actually some crossover in voices. There were two recurring character actors on Dragnet that actually played the role of Archie Goodwin, and that was Herb Ellis and Harry Bartell, both of whom did work as fill-in partners between Ben Romero and Frank Smith. Also, the most popular version of Nero Wolf out there for old-time radio was made for NBC, which also made Dragnet, so you might see some crossover in the cast there in terms of extras and guest stars. But thanks so much for the comment. Always glad to make new acquaintances through the show. And that'll actually do it for now. Send your comments to Box 13. Oh, almost forgot. This Wednesday, we'll be continuing our TV episodes. And this month, in December, we're going to play for you the Big Little Jesus, the 22 rifle for Christmas. All right, now we're ready to wrap up. Box 13 at GreatDetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives. Reminder to support Andrew Rhines and the old-time Radio Daily Westerns at PodcastAwards.com. And become one of our friends over on Facebook, facebook.radiodragnet.com. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.